Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling in association with Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. I'm Graham Wilgos, and Brad, we're back in the pub, but it's not just you and me today.
No, we've got William Defoe here from Platoon, our cameraman, who's actually a lookalike of William Defoe.
Our cameraman, Scott.
And of course, Dan Lloyd, anchor extraordinaire.
Dan Lloyd, welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show.
Thanks very much, Graham.
Stage 5 already, the Giro d'Italia.
Yeah.
Mileto to Camilliatello Solano and Ineos have got their mojo back.
Yeah, not just Ineos, but one rider in particular.
Filippo Ganna taking the stage win with an awesome solo breakaway from the breakaway, just as the peloton were closing in within the final 16 kilometres and soloing, which doesn't really do it justice, does it?
Well,
climbing and descending.
On terrain that no one expected to see a performance like of the light, you know?
Yeah, and so an awesomely impressive win. His second win at the Giro in the space of 5 days, Brad.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we keep, you know, these superlatives to put it into context, but he's 82 kilos. It was a 22-kilometer climb. At one point, he looked like he was going to get dropped from the break. Next minute, he's off the front, and he's just a phenomenon. He was incredibly impressive from a young age on the track in the individual pursuit. Set a world record this year that most team pursuits will struggle to go faster than. He just seems to be getting better and better. He's dominant, like almost unbeatable in any time trial rides. And today on terrain, as we say, it resembled the likes of Jan Ulrich, Miguel Indurain, big riders. Even Dan said in post-show today that, is there any resemblance with yourself? I don't think there is. I think he's genetically, physically gifted. I couldn't do that at his age. Not many riders could. I mean, he's a phenomenon.
But it's a fair question, Dan, because he's got a similar background to you, Brad, in coming from the track. Okay, he's come to the road maybe a little bit earlier, at 24.
Yeah, but I would say I couldn't replicate what I did on the track on the road then. And he's, it took me years of specialization. He seems to do it like that, you know, and he's far more talented, gifted, as I say, physically and genetically. I had to train to reach those powers in order to win those time trials. He has a natural ability, much like Cancellara did, a huge power up. Stannard's the same. It's a transfer, but not all riders can transfer that power, like Ian Stannard, huge power outputs, but could never produce it in a time trial. Whereas he is able to do that, and with those powers and the weight, I mean, it doesn't even seem that body weight, you know, you don't have to lose 10 kilos. He's already there almost, I would say.
He rode away on that climb with such ease, didn't he?
Well, and I think he was working for Puccio in that break.
Puccio's wingman.
He was doing a lot of work on the front. If he was working for himself, he was doing an awful lot of work on the front. So I think he was just there thinking, well, I'll work for Puccio. He's a decent climber. Maybe not the best in this group, but I've got no chance. And then just obviously felt phenomenal on that final climb. I think he struggled a bit on the steep section, didn't he? He got distanced slightly at one point. But when the gradients were at 4 or 5%, his raw power came through. Yeah. I'd love to see the numbers. Like, as Brad says, 82 kilograms going up any climb. Like that guy, I would say, for the Tirreno Adriatico time trial of about 10 minutes, he was over 500 watts for that.
I would say over 500 watts.
I'd imagine like what he can do for an hour is probably 470-ish.
Yeah, I mean, because he's got a good position on his TT bike, but I wouldn't say he's like, that's where he differs from me, because I had a good time trial position, but I had very narrow shoulders, a very narrow frame, quite narrow legs, skinny legs, and I was sort of, that aided me, and my height and size and being able to leverage powers that were required for those efforts. But I also had a small frame, and that riders of that height and weight sometimes struggle, because he's 82 kilos for a body mass reason, you know, muscle. You've only got to push that through the air. And I wouldn't say his time trial position is that, I mean, it's a good time trial position, but some riders, I'm trying to think of certain riders that really look aerodynamic. He looks aerodynamic, but it's his power that is causing the force and the power production that's causing the speed, which reminds me of Cancellara. Cancellara didn't have the best position, but he had that mass to push through the air, but it was his power that did that. And that is what's most impressive is, you know, some riders have this amazing extreme time trial position that looks incredible, wind tunnel-esque, you know, but his isn't. It's just his power that does it. And that's where he differs to me because I had a much narrower frame.
And so I'm glad you mentioned Cancellara because Ganna grew up idolising Brad yourself, Cancellara and Tom Bonin.
Yeah. But he's very much Tom Bonin's frame and on the time trial bike and climbing. It's kind of those, that's the sort of size you're talking. Whereas you look at G on the time trial bike or Chris Froome, they're like half the size, well, they're the same height. And that's what's most impressive with him. He's a big lad when you see him, you know, when you're in front of him. He's not, you know, he's broad and so those shoulders have got to go somewhere when you're time trialing. There's only so much you can put them in and that's always going to be his limiter, but it doesn't slow him down. Which means his legs and the power production is phenomenal.
It is just raw power, isn't it? I mean, there can't be many riders in the pro peloton that are his size. I think, you know, everyone increasingly is getting leaner and leaner these days. And I'm not saying he's not lean, but he's big boned, isn't he? And
Voigt was very similar, wasn't he?
He was a big guy, yeah. These days,
he could climb, but he didn't have that finesse on a bike. He looked like a duck landing on ice, didn't he? Really, most of the time.
But I think that's like you said. You know, reminiscent of Miguel Indurain because he also didn't have a phenomenal time trial position. It was just raw power. And because he had that raw power, he could go faster than the time trials and even lug his frame up the climbs.
Reminded Taylor Finney a little bit when he came into the scene. Big raw power guy, you know. But Taylor wasn't capable of climbing like that.
What was your best time in the individual pursuit?
4.12, 4.13.
And how much difference do you think has been made through clothing and technology since then?
I would say a lot, yeah.
And Gavin's got it down to 4 minutes and 1 second.
Only natural loss. If he'd have been riding then, I don't think I could have beat him then on the track because it's his physical makeup. It's not the bike and the skin suit that is making him do those times. That's not the reason for it. He's a physical specimen, and I don't think I'd have beat him looking back if I'm completely honest with numbers and all that because he'd have had the same equipment, you know.
Well, I mentioned Rob there. Here's how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport today.
But here, it's a smile, it's delight, and yet again, it's going to be success. He sees the finish line. He's all alone. And Filippo Ganna, who idolised Tom Bonin, Bradley Wiggins, Fabian Cancellara, has ridden like all three of them together today. He's been strong to get away. He's climbed like a goat in the mountains, and he is going to ride a time trial alone to the finish. Ganna has done it. 6 hours of racing, and now, for the first time in his professional career, he's the winner of a proper road race. Much more than a time trialist. Is there any limit to what Filippo Ganna can achieve? For now, it's another stage win at the Giro d'Italia. Top Ganna. Gans out again.
So Brad, Dario Cioni said at the end, a man you know well, from now on we'll be counting on Ganna on different parts of the course. Do you think that might even have been a surprise to Ineos today, exactly what he's done there? So he said, Cioni, I'll give you the rest of his quote. He said, breakaway all day long, nasty conditions, showed how strong he was, and he was pretty clever with how he dealt with it today.
Yeah, I mean, the fact he was riding for Pucho shows that I actually think he surprised himself. And he would do it. It's his first Giro. So,
first Giro, first Grand Tour.
He's just getting better and better all the time. And sometimes, you know, when you get on the front and just go for it, and you're feeling good. I mean, he just booted it up that climb. I don't think he knows what he's capable of, and he's learning all the time.
Well, so here's the next question then. What might he be capable of? And like even in this Giro, is it a shame that we've already seen him lose that time when he was working for Geraint Thomas to try and get Thomas back into the field on stage three up Mount Etna?
Well, if they were riding for him since the start, he'd still be in contention for GC, I think. But we didn't know that 5 days ago. He didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, his concentration was the prologue, having just won a world title. You know, at no point would they have thought, Filippo, you're going to go for the Giro, GC. You know, he's quite, although he's 25, 26, he's quite adolescent, which isn't derogatory in any way. Because he's very mature as an athlete and can execute his rides, but he's quite adolescent in his demeanor and the way he carries himself. He's always smiling. He's quite joyous. When you follow his Instagram, he's always like happy with his girlfriend and messing around in Italy, always smiling. He's not rocking up at the start, Mr. Robotic, serious, every gram of carbohydrate to the... It's like he's a junior that is just the biggest junior who's dominating. And that's not to be diminished or be derogatory in any way. It actually makes him better for the sport because, you know, there's especially in a team like Ineos, it's, riders can be so serious and dialed and this, that and the other. And we see that. But come on after the thing today, you know, he doesn't say things like, I've been working for this. I'm just glad it's paid off. All the training, all the sacrifices. He's just like, I never imagined he would win a set. And he's just smiling. And it's like, it takes everything in stride, you know. He's one of them kind of riders where you just sort of say, you know, go and give it some. You can win this race. And he does. And he does. And he's like, see, I told you. He's like, it's just, he's phenomenal.
And the blue jersey is his reward today, Dan.
Yeah. Well, he's going to get a lot more rewards in the future now. So I was just about to say that last couple of years, I've always put a little bit of money on Ganna for Paris-Roubaix. I think he won like the under-23 Roubaix or something.
Yeah.
He could sort of go either way, couldn't he?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like if I was him, I might go more the classics route because whilst he and Brad were about the same weight, you know, when Brad was focused on the track and whilst he's focused on time trials on the track at the moment, you know, I'd still say that Brad was slightly more of slender build. Like if you just look at Ganna's knees and ankles, he's just a big guy. And I'm not sure how capable he would be of getting down to the sort of 70, even 74 kilograms. He just strikes me as someone that's always going to be at least 78, which I know is what Miguel Indurain was, but he's another guy that's going to have to make a choice at some point because the sport's just getting more and more specialised. And apart from Wout van Aert, maybe, you know, most people have got to be either Grand Tour contenders or time trialists or classic specialists or whatever.
So the blue jersey for Ganna today, he's already wore the pink jersey in this tour. Ineos riding better when the pressure is off. Is that what we're seeing this season? When very little is expected of them?
No, I don't think so. It's a different team. And they've got such talent across the board and such. They've got so many players. It's not Ineos in terms of like a football team where you put the same 11 out and now they're performing better. This is a different team. And these are their other players that we haven't really seen. But we have seen them. We saw them in Torino and that because Ganna won there. It's just their tour team wasn't up to what it has been in the past. But this isn't Ineos as a whole. You know, it's just, it was always going to happen and they were always going to win. You know, it's very easy to generalise a whole team that they've not done very well. But they have, of course. They were winning early in the season. They were winning on Midi-Lib or whatever that race has now become. You know, so it's the tour team failed as a unit, but through their leader getting injured, etc. as well. But they did win a stage. Other riders, individuals, had good performances. But it wasn't. You know, that is just billed as the biggest race of the year that they've always got right. G couldn't help crashing and would have very much been in the frame. But these guys would have all been supporting G, as we said, had he got pink. They're just now free to do what they want, really, and have a go. And they are doing it, which is what happened at the Tour in the last week. So it's not been a fundamental failure for them all year.
And I was just about to say that, you know, you wouldn't put it past, or actually you'd say it's probable that Ganna's going to win four stages. There's two more time trials here. Unless they pull him out of the Giro, like I hope they will, and send him to Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah.
So to round out the podium today, Ganna came in 34 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. Bora's Patrick Conrad in second and João Almeida defending the Maglia Rossa. He extends his lead to 43 seconds on GC. We expect Almeida to hold on to...
Sorry, just on that, Graham. Does Paris-Roubaix overlap with this race?
Yes, on the last day of the Giro.
Yeah. I had a thought, do you think Sagan would do that? Pull out of you?
Well, I don't know.
After points jersey is gone?
Yeah, I've had the same thought, or even Arnaud Démare.
But can you start two races on the same day?
Well, you have to get dispensation from the UCI. So if you pull out injured, often give you dispensation to then restart if you've recovered in time to do it.
Because you
race.
Can't start a race where that coincides
that
with another race.
The one that you pulled out from,
with intent to go to that race. It has to be through no fault of your own.
Well, no, I don't know that. I think it's literally...
Well, that's what it normally is, isn't it?
I think it's literally just the dispensation of the UCI.
I think that's based on if you've crashed and you're out and you want to start racing again or you've got ill, then they will give you that. You can't just climb off at the feed on the Saturday and then go and start the race on Sunday with intent, you know?
Well, there might be a few feigned illnesses then
in the second week. Yeah, got a bellyache.
What would you want to do if you were Ganna at this point?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, I can't answer it from it. I don't know I really don't know. He might not want to do Paris-Roubaix. Who knows?
What would you do with your career if you were Ganna at this point? What would you focus on?
Well, I don't know. There's so much emphasis now on pressure to become a GC rider. And if you don't, it's like, oh, it's a shame. You know, he probably could have won. And I don't know why the Grand Tours... Do you think this guy could win a Grand Tour? It's like it's become the Holy Grail.
Well, that might be... That might have come from you. I think a lot of people that are good time trialists with a high threshold power probably looked at you and thought, well, he's lost a load of weight and then he won the Tour de France, so maybe
is,
I can do that.
Is winning a Grand Tour the Holy Grail over someone like Ganna now going, I want to try and win Or Van Aert. I want to try and beat the Paris-Roubaix record. I want to win five Flanders, you know? That's my guy. I always wanted to be a classic rider and that's my guy. I want to win the world title one day. I never watched the Tour de France. People, you know, people, riders like that. There's got to come from the rider, unless they like the idea and the challenge of it. But other than that, you might go, do you know what? I don't know if I want to do that. And I think there's always an emphasis. People say, do you think this guy could win a Grand Tour one day? So you might not want to. It's as simple as that. And that question never gets asked. And I don't know why a Grand Tour, to win a Grand Tour is hard. You might be capable and have all the qualities and get to the weight where you're capable. But again, look what happened to Geraint this year. That crash. Richie Port, how many tours was he in shape to win it? And look what happened to him. I only won one. I crashed one year, this, that and the other. So that puts into perspective the likes of Chris Froome's exploits and how many Grand Tours he's won. Because it's hard. And how much you have to go through in order to do that. And that's what makes him so special as an athlete. Just to win one's hard enough.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists, for life on and off your bike. Lacquer has flipped outdated traditional insurance on its head, with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Plus, 80% of your money goes straight back into the collective, fixing, replacing, and helping. And the other 20% keeps their wheels spinning. It's as simple as that. And when things go bad, Lacquer's got your back. Claims are handled by experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. They've ditched annual contracts locking you in. With Lacquer, if you want to leave, you can, anytime. Head over to www.lacquer.co, where new customers can get £10 credit by signing up today with the discount code WIGGINS.
Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show, sponsored by Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. Chaps, we left before the break. We left it at João Almeida extending his lead in the Maglia Rossa to 43 seconds. Just to pick out a couple of, I think, what we would call the main contenders on GC. Vincenzo Nibali, 1 minute and 1 second in fifth. Seventh, Jakob Fuglsang, 1 minute and 19. And in eighth place, Stephen Krauswijk at 1:21. What do we make of the GC at this point? I know it's still early days, but those three are sitting pretty, right?
Yeah, I noticed you've eliminated Simon Yates out of that.
Well, I'm going to come to Simon Yates because we've got three Brits clustered together in 19, 20 and 21st place. So Theo is actually the top place Brit on GC at 3 minutes and 18. He finished in the main group today, as did Simon Yates. James Knox in 20th, 3 minutes and 26. And Simon is 3 minutes and 52. So we saw him today dropping out of the main group and sort of riding his way back in. But he managed to finish with the main GC contenders.
I think James Knox has got a great chance of finishing in the top 10, the way that the GC's panned out. I think the way the GC's panned out, and already the action we've had on day, we're only on day five, Nibali will get better in 2 weeks' time for that last 4 days. His experience will pay dividends, as will Jakob Fuglsang. Krauswijk, I think he'll, because of these crash, I think he'll get better as the race goes on.
His crash in the Dauphiné you're talking about here.
I think he's got a podium, potential podium in him here. Now we've got rid of G, etc. There's a chance for a surprise in that top 4 or 5. Pozzovivo will be there, top 10. And I think Simon Yates has the potential, having lost Geraint, etc., to climb his way back into a potential podium spot, because if he's 3 minutes down in 2.5 weeks' time, he'll be on the podium.
There's something wrong with him at the moment, though, isn't there?
Well, I don't know.
It must be. I mean, he won that stage of Tirreno. He went away from Geraint on that mountaintop finish. you know, that was just a couple of weeks before this race started.
And so having looked so good then.
Yeah,
he
went in his second favourite behind Geraint to win the race here. And, you know, that climb today, they didn't go that hard up it. You know, there was still a group of, what, 20, 25 riders. Even Simon Yates on bad form would have stayed in that group. But he, like you say, he was distanced. There's an underlying issue. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it must be.
A slight illness or something. But as long as he can get through this bit. I mean, the next few days, I don't think, are particularly decisive from a GC point of view. The next one's maybe Sunday. If you can get through that and get over whatever illness it is, then, you know, like I said, it's a long way still to go after that.
You know when he finished that stage the other day on Etna? He had his shirt fully undone. He looked in distress. He looked in pain. And I haven't seen him look like that since he finished that stage Froome won in the Giro when he won the race. And that was a long time ago. Simon and Adam are very, very consistent. They're always there and present in races. So like Dan said, there must be an issue with him. But I only saw the interview that Matt White gave straight after the race and we weren't aware of anything. We had Durbo, Turbo and Zerbo. They were there. We're going to throw bombs up the road, control wind stages, right? Oh, when the wheel, I'm going to go spin bad bus down. We got Durbo, Turbo, Zerbo and we're going, we go. And so I don't know if they're playing a game. No, we don't know if he's got an issue, but they might be hiding something. There's clearly something wrong. Because I was thinking, when I watched that Etna's finish, I was thinking of all the things he could have I thought a stomach bug. But they just said off the stage.
There are reasons to hide it, aren't there? We saw the other day when Geraint was off the back, Trek Segafredo went straight to the front. You know, if people know that you've got a weakness or an illness and you're a main contender for the race, other teams are going to want to put you completely out of the race. So it would benefit them to not say anything if Simon Yates is under the weather for any particular reason, because they're thinking, well, if he gets through the next few days and doesn't lose too much time, comes back to where we know he should be, then he's still got a chance. But if they reveal that to us and to the public and to the other teams, they're going to put the boot in and make sure he's out of it now.
One more point from today's overall picture. So Ganna went, as I said earlier, he went from the breakaway and went solo to win it. Thomas de Gendt and Movistar's Aina Rubio were having a little bit of a bicker just before Ganna decided to leave them to it. So De Gendt has subsequently tweeted this evening. He's defending the fact that he was clearly sort of giving Rubio what for on the road. Yes, it was teaching. You don't deserve to win if you don't do any work. It was not up to me to close every gap. And then he followed up with, when we made it into the break, he attacked. So he was not on the limit. If then he still doesn't want to pull, then that's more a mentality problem. I'm not giving him a free ride to the finish. So Rubio is 22. Thomas de Gendt, we know, is an old hand. Fair enough from de Gendt?
I think so, yeah. Although I think de Gendt must have been on his limit too. I don't think he would let a stage win go up the road if he'd had the legs to win it.
I mean, he finished 5 minutes and 51 seconds down. Rubio came in 4 minutes down.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand his frustration. And Rubio had a reason to sit on De Gendt all the way up to the point at which they caught the breakaway, because he had his teammate up the road. But at that point, I know De Gendt was obviously thinking, well, you've no longer got a reason to sit on my wheel. You need to sort of give me some turns on the front, and was obviously still getting frustrated after that. And I understand those frustrations, but De Gendt had made he'd closed a two-minute gap pretty much on his own. He'd been riding on the front. And so I don't think he had the legs when Ganna went on the slightly shallower stretches of the climb towards the end anyway. I read the same things on Twitter, and he obviously wasn't very happy with him, and understandably so, in my opinion.
Brad, what did you make of this one?
I don't know why Thomas is wasting his time. This has been going on for generations, It's called glass cranker, Why is he bothering, worrying about it, You don't have to teach him with teachings. It's like Thomas de Gendt is Thomas de Gendt. You put yourself in that bloke's position, right? Aside from the fact we don't know what his car was telling him to do. Sit on him. It's Thomas de Gendt. He's an animal. I mean, Thomas, that's up to him. I wouldn't worry about it, Thomas. You're Thomas de Gendt. You'd have to teach him, but it's not your duty to. And you don't have to worry about getting on into Twitter in the evening and putting this big long thing out. Like, worry about tomorrow. But you imagine Thomas is quite modest. You imagine being in the break with Thomas de Gendt, who's finished third in the Giro 8 years ago. How was that lad 22? He'd have been, 14. You probably watched Thomas finish third in the Giro up the Stelvio. I'm in the break with Thomas de Gendt. He's an animal. He eats sausages for a living. You know, it's not always one side. You have to publicly shame this kid, Aside from me, he's 22, and his directors go, sit on him. Thomas is strong. He's going to attack you later on. If you work with him, he's going to blow you out. Don't do any work with him. and this lad's getting shamed publicly. You know, he's like, and it, Twitter's like that, isn't it? It sort of get, it allows people. We didn't used to have that. I mean, it's just that's what happens in bike races, and you don't really know the full context to why the lad was sitting on. You might have the ultimate respect for him. If I give this lad a turn, he's going to blow me away anyway. And he finished at 5 minutes, and if I finish at 4 minutes, I've beat Thomas again. And I, you know, there's just so much context to it. I just have to see it both ways. And this lad won't reply on Twitter because it's Thomas again. I've got a lot of respect for him. And
he's better off not doing so. Another old hand that we should mention, Peter Sagan, in yesterday's sprint finish, second by millimetres, hasn't won a race since the Tour de France last year. It was too close to call on the line almost, won by Arnaud Démare, with Davide Ballerini in third. Sagan, what do we make of his chances for the rest of the race? Are we going to see him in the sprint jersey?
Who knows, but he's getting back to the Sagan of old, isn't he? And he's not a pure blunt sprinter, is he? He's capable of much more. So to get that close to Démare, he's doing well.
Should also mention the helicopter causing the barriers at the finish yesterday to crash into two riders, Luca Wackerman, who's out of the race now, and Etienne Van Impel, both from Vini Zabu KTM. A freak crash at the end of stage four, the helicopter blowing the safety barriers across their path. I mean, once again, we're talking about rider safety, and it seems like a very simple fix. So secure the barriers, make sure the helicopter doesn't fly too low that it causes this sort of thing to happen. I mean, you've both ridden in races, surely, when you've known the helicopter's creeping a little bit too close, right?
Well, I've been in races where the helicopter's caused a split because it was too low. And it was in Italy, actually. I don't know. You know, without those helicopters, we don't get the images. You know, there's a lot of things about that affect the races and barriers. And I mean, it's a freak accident. It doesn't happen every race, does it?
No.
But it is unfortunate.
But there's no reason for it to happen at all. I mean, what does that feel like when you've got the helicopter sort of hovering that close to you as a rider?
I don't know if it ever happened. Well, actually, I mean, if a helicopter was too close to me, they were following the wrong group. But no, I mean, it must have been bloody low to cause the barriers to blow into the path of some riders on the finish line, like incredibly low. You know, you can feel the effects of a helicopter's blades from quite a long way above you. So to manage to do that, because I don't know, they claimed that the barriers were tied down properly, etc., etc.
What would it take to tie them barriers down to stop the helicopter blowing them over?
Presumably very little. But it's a very simple thing to fix.
What's it going to take for every barrier on the route that has a potential to have a low helicopter stop a barrier blowing over?
Well, so
because it's an extreme gust of wind, isn't it?
Sure, yeah, of course it is. But then the instructions are very
simple.
I'll tell you what it's going to take. The instructions are very simple.
Helicopter driver, stay a bit higher.
There you go.
Bang tidy.
Bang tidy.
No, but it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
That's the simple answer.
But again, it's a very simple fix to something that causes injury to the pro peloton.
But I'll tell you one thing. I've always said this. There are more accidents in bike races from team cars, right, where you've got a director sportif who is on the radio, looking at a map, on his phone, handing bottles up. If you did that on the normal roads, that is driving mama due care and attention, let alone riders coming up through the peloton. They are not trained in advanced driving courses even to be doing that with two hands on a wheel. I always said that should become illegal and you should have someone in the passenger seat with all those apparatus. And the driver is a driver, concentrating on that.
Well, yeah, they do. Often the person doing the tactics is in the passenger seat, but you're right. They're still doing
something, aren't they?
Yeah, and we've got cameras in now. This surprises me a lot, actually. Yeah. Like we've now got the footage from inside the team cars. And it was a Jumbo-Visma one the other day that was watching. I think it might have been the win when they won with Primoz Roglic at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And there were some very long glances from the driver down to the, you know, the TV.
They're watching telly. You can't do that on the roads, can you?
Well, no, and you shouldn't be able to do it like you said in the race. Even though they weren't going massively fast, they're still in a convoy. They don't know when riders have been dropped or whatever. Yeah, and I'm with you on that. Like, I think at some point you just need like a taxi driver that's got a qualification in driving,
or you have to be a certain level of motorcycle rider. All the cameramen on the tour, the press motorbikes, are all ex-Garde de la République, you know, the police outriders. But team car drivers, you can have the Chuckle Brothers driving a car for Wanty Goubert. But it's true. And no one questions that. because the DS, it's a willy waving exercise. I'm the DS. Here's my bottle, driving me knee. Pass me another bottle. You know, cars breaking up front, riders on the bonnet. It needs to be looked at.
Two riders that the helicopter at Brabant's Pale were certainly following: Julian Alaphilippe in the World Champions jersey and Mathieu van der Poel. So we almost saw a repeat of Liège-Bastogne-Liège today in Flanders. Van der Poel almost pipping Alaphilippe to the line. Alaphilippe celebrating as we saw him at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Van der Poel almost getting there. Again, a matter of centimetres. Alaphilippe, though, first win in the rainbow jersey. And it's the, as Killian Kelly for GCN pointed out, it's the first time on the same day that the world road race champion and the world time trial champion has won a race.
Yeah, good stat that, I thought.
So all right, a stat worth repeating.
How many years has it been possible to have that stat?
Since 1994, when the first World Time Trial
Championship. Which is not a long time, seeing how long cycling's been around.
Still a good stat.
All right.
So, Van der Poel, I mean, Dan, you watched this one. Van der Poel and Alaphilippe duking it out together in the last 20 kilometres. They were never going to let, the other was never going to let the other one get away, were they, knowing what they're capable of from distance?
I don't think it would have mattered what happened in that race, really. As long as they were near the front, it would have been between Alaphilippe and Van der Poel. I don't really know what Van der Poel was doing in that last 200 metres. I mean, he had the perfect lead out from Benoît Cousnefroy of AG2R.
Yeah.
And he could have gone at 150 metres to go, but he waited.
Almost felt like he got boxed in, though. He managed to get boxed in with two other riders on the road.
He should have just gone. Like, he's so fast in a sprint. He should have just gone and he would have won that race fairly easily, in my opinion. But he didn't start sprinting until 50 metres to go.
Another bit of news, Brad, that you can almost certainly relate to. Tadej Pogacar won't line up for the Tour of Flanders as previously intended on October the 18th. His team, UAE Team Emirates, say he needs a rest, which might well mean the end of his season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't really relate to that because of the year we're in. I carried on racing after 12, did Tour of Britain, World Championships.
Why did you carry on?
I don't know, actually. Team wanted me to, so, you know, extend your season as much as possible that you don't have as much hard work afterwards.
We saw G at the Tour of Britain after he won the Tour, and there was a point where he wanted to go for the win on one of the stages, I think, into Wrexham, and he just didn't have it in his legs.
Yeah, well, you don't.
He clearly needed a rest at that point, too.
Well, Brad did a Tour of Britain as well in 2012, yeah, didn't you? Yeah. And
I didn't need a rest. I just stopped training and was drinking. Yeah.
It's like you were saying earlier, like the longer you can go into the season, the less chance there is of letting yourself go so much in the off season that you've got too much work to do when you start the next year. The only trouble is that once you've won the Tour, you can't really go to the Tour of Britain anonymously and just get some more K's in the legs and start the off season in slightly better shape, because there's a scrutiny of everyone looking at you to do something. And like you said, you know, Geraint Thomas trying to go for a stage winning Wrexham and failing, but he won the Tour 2 months before.
Okay, moving on to tomorrow's stage 6 of the Giro, Castrovillari to Matera, 188 kilometres across the south of Italy. Officially a flat stage with a couple of climbs towards the start, no higher than 1,000 metres. A few mile climbs and descents in the closing part, leading to punchier bits in the stage finale. What are we expecting tomorrow, boys?
I love that it's officially a flat stage.
I was going to say, is it officially a flat? Is that what it says, a flat stage?
Officially a flat stage, according to the, wow, according to the Giro, yeah.
With an uphill finish.
2.6% incline to finish. It's an 800-metre home straight, 2.6%. So are we looking at Matthews? Are we looking at Sagan for tomorrow?
Yeah. Maybe a breakaway. Who knows?
I
think it'll be a breakaway. Like, you know, there's a 12K climb at the start, I think. Or there's a long climb anyway.
Long climb at the start,
you know,
it's
hard to control that. And I don't know, there's not really the team's... I don't think they'll want to control it there, or indeed for the following 100 and whatever kilometres afterwards before they get into Matera.
This Giro's been so unpredictable. I think Sagan's going to start moving a bit now.
Yeah.
Maybe the breakaway.
Tomorrow, to me, feels like a stage for Peter Sagan, but we will see. That brings us to the end of this episode of The Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport. Thank you to our sponsor, Alaka Bicycle Insurance. Brad, as ever, we can follow you on social media at
Sir Wiggo.
Sir Wiggo. Dan, where can we find you being social?
Sir Lloyd.
I should add that you can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you to our producer, Pete Burton.
Pete Burton.
Podcast Pete. And finally, from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, share your thoughts, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Brad, bonus pod from you tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Bonus.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.